You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
So hello, everyone, also participating in the Zoom session. Sustainability. We just saw how COVID has affected the activities from SAMEC, and I think that's an observation we see across the world when it comes to, face-to-face meetings, people coming together and sharing ideas and working collaboratively on topics. As much as I appreciate technology that helps, you know, to cross boundaries and time zones and all of that, and allows us to be much more flexible in coming together, the option to have a face-to-face meeting and be with your peers in a room is actually very valuable. So I have to say, I'm a bit sorry that we're just like five guys sitting here in this room. this is someone now actually giving an overview on the, let's say, the outcome of the study group item and sustainability. And sustainability is actually also about topics like, carbon footprint and stuff like this. But at the end of the day, I tried to compensate this fact that I've took a plane to Japan, because there's not really another way to do this in a more economical or ecological way, is that I then use public transportation and walk also to some of those.
You came by walk and swimming.
And well, you know, that would have been a challenge. That would have been a massive challenge. I think sustainability is the topic of the day. We provide, or my company and me in particular, we also provide consulting services around digital and IT strategy. And it's interesting to see that sustainability now is, I would say, a regular element, if not kind of like a mandatory element in all of IT strategy documents that I've seen for 2023 or upcoming years, that is definitely on the CIO agenda. For some of those companies, it's probably just to have this, box ticked and, to have maybe here and there just an excuse. We know about this topic of greenwashing, and, I think it's in our hands to deal with this. And I'm coming from Germany. I'm not sure if you have seen the news, but I think this is a general move right now for some of the people that actually try to push this message. It's even a political statement that tends to be sometimes critical. I'm not sure if you hear about the last generation activities around the world. But for instance, we have people now actually cluing themselves on streets, trying to block traffic in order to make the government be more open for topics around sustainability. I think really, I don't want to be one of them and gluing myself to some places or trying to just, show off. We can do with our activities quite a bit. What we have done in the study group, and I have to say, it's pretty much the result or outcome also of a very close alignment. And you have mentioned that with the cybersecurity topic, with the item forum. The item forum has a special interest group for several, months now. It started in 2022, also on sustainability. And so much of the ideas and topics are also a collaborative result. And I could say, I don't want to take any credit for, specifically the activities that the special interest group, and Sherry is in the call. And she's, I think, one of the most active ones in the special interest group, trying to push this message, to the community. So just to have a general understanding of what I have done with the study group, or what we have done with the special interest group. So there is a regular alignment and coordination, and I really appreciate the support that we get from the item forum. And there is quite a long list of participants. I tried to list the ones that are most active. So there are, dozens of names participating in the special interest group. So there is a massive really, I would say, pick up on this topic, and maybe everyone agrees with me. But you know, that isn't, that definitely is not going away. And I will show you a couple of ideas that we think can be helpful also in developing this guidance document that we were talking about, the Dash 13. So what I have also done is just also to get an understanding of what is already there. It's not like that we are talking about sustainability as being like the new kid on the block since last year or so, because you know, COVID gave us time to think about our life and the situation our planet is in. I mean, this topic is with ISO for quite some time. It's not necessarily related to IT asset manage IT assets in particular, but there are definitely a couple of standards out there that we should be aware of. So I took a closer look at those. Plus, we have now a collection of, let's call it like sustainability elements, I think are applicable to IT assets. And maybe we have also a chance to talk through those and want to get your thoughts on it. And then a couple of recommendations for next steps. And I already mentioned that. So I would really like to push this guidance document so that we get this published as soon as possible. I mean, you know, we are on the top of the wave right now when it comes to awareness. So this is not that we have to ring the bell and make people aware of this topic. They are aware. And I think they are definitely requiring some guidance. So that is something we should push. So, you know, just also to get everyone's understanding basically aligned and have a common understanding of what sustainability is. Interestingly enough, you know, I'm a big fan, meanwhile, of ChatGPT. So I asked ChatGPT of what sustainability is, and that was pretty much the outcome of it. And it's interesting, you know, some of the stuff that comes out of ChatGPT is crap, sorry. But, you know, for some topics, again, I'm not taking credit for this. I was just trying to, and English is not my native language, so I'm trying to, you know, try to find the right words to put it together. And yes, I have adjusted a little bit the wording that came out of it, but it's all about the capacity of a system, and we're talking about IT asset management system, so that this system is able to be maintained and continued over a long term, which means, you know, this is not just short term focused. In other words, we're not looking to do this now in order to have, you know, a sustainable approach to IT assets that we use now. It has to be something that is basically a continuous process that we want to implement. And the focus definitely is on, you know, having that approach without, is it called depleting resources? And that made me think about what that actually includes when we talk about IT assets. And kind of like taking the fun away a bit by already saying, we quite often look at stuff like, you know, energy consumption.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Right, so this is kind of like the thing, you know. Because energy has to be produced. So, and yes, you know, I have also now a, you know, photovoltaic thing. You know, I'm collecting now sunlight and charge my car. Now our family has two e-cars. So we basically swapped away from carbon based fuel. But this is just, you know, we still use energy, but we want to use this make use of energy in a very meaningful way. However, when we think about IT assets, you know, energy kind of like pops in our head right away. And it's definitely one of the main drivers. And then we think on a second part, again, I'm taking a little bit the fun away of the elements, is then basically, what are those things made of, right? So is this actually, you know, sustainable as the material that we're using, you know, talking about hardware, you know. So I'll get to all of this, but this is the topic. So without depleting resources or causing significant harm to the environment. In other words, how was that made, you know? Then it says compromising the well-being of present and future generations, you know, coming back to those activists, you know, as much as I, you know, kind of like, am I, as much as I'm aligned with some of their ideas, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it's everything they do is for good cause. But, you know, talking about future generations means what can we do in order so that they have still, you know, basically the same level of life quality as we have today. So it's always balancing, as it says, economic, environmental, and social factors. This is quite interesting. You know, I haven't really looked into the social element, but everyone probably is aware of this, you know, short-term ESG. I hope that says something to everyone.
Yeah.
Environmental, social, governance. Oh. Yeah. And there are definitely a couple of things where, so it's not just about, you know, was this made with the lowest amount of energy possible, with, you know, with the lowest amount of resources in whatever way, but also was the stuff produced under, you know, acceptable working conditions and, you know, things like that. That's also part in a way when it comes to sustainability. I haven't too much focus on this, but it's all about this equilibrium between human activities and the natural world. So, it, you know, and then with the last sentence, in essence, sustainability aims to meet the needs of the present without compromising the ability for future generations, again, to meet their own needs. Now, for me, that was quite interesting to see what, you know, what an artificial intelligence was understanding by reading through documents that are available or that have been fed to this AI in order to come back with that definition. So it's quite interesting to see what that came up with. Now, again, you know, there is a special interest group, and it's basically coordinated by Hanan from Item Forum. And Sherry, I put you like on the second spot. And again, you know, maybe you are actually on the top because you're very active. Jennifer Carr, Astrid Wine, AJ Witt, those are just a couple of names and more. The list is quite long of people that actually are in the special interest group. There are also other liaisons that are maintained from the special interest group to an organization called Sustainable IT, SDI Alliance, R2, TCO certified. So definitely there is quite some activity going. And when you actually look at what has happened, so we have this interest group now in place. To what I know, and Sherry, I probably am incorrect with the date, but to what I can recall, that has been initiated last year, and to what I know was actually in the third quarter. I started participating then pretty much in the fourth quarter of 2022, when, for instance, there were some activities around preparing presentations, for instance, for a wisdom event, which is hosted on a regular basis from the Item Forum. By the way, there is one next week where I will be participating together with Engelpoint and a couple of other members. So there is the EMEA Wisdom event. I'm not sure if there's actually something on sustainability, but nonetheless, for the Wisdom app, APEC was a presentation on sustainability. Also, we had then actually the alignment. That was when I basically also stepped in and started to participate in the very regular meetings from the special interest group. Starting actually this year, there was quite some activity around getting a webinar prepared to have, you know, basically also to spread the message. We are currently looking into dates and topics and target audiences and presenters, so and panelists. So this is basically what's going on. There are a couple of surveys which have been carried out and are still, I think, like for some of those topics ongoing. Next steps, you know, just talking about, you know, what I think, and this is now basically leaving a little bit the general activity around the special interest group, which I, again, appreciate a lot for what they do there. I like the discussions. They're very, very straightforward, very focused. But that we actually now find some next steps to organize the development of this. I even called it an ISO standard. Not sure if that guidance is the right level, but you know, it's just a thought that this may become an actual standard, like you know, something like -11-5-1, etc. So this is basically what happened over the last couple of months, and. What I just did, and this is just to give you an idea of what's already going on with ISO and sustainability. So there's quite some activity. I'm not sure if you are all aware of those different standards. I think the one that pops out, which probably everyone knows, is the 14001. It's on environmental management systems. So this is all about, like, you know, how to improve on your environmental performance. And I put a little, let's say, a certificate icon in front of it where you can actually get certified for the standard. So quite a few companies also in Germany, and I think this is an international thing, have now this one either already in place or have it discovered now as being also an option to demonstrate sound and good management and good governance on environmental aspects. So this is kind of like experience a renaissance. You know, it was a little bit on the downside for the years when it was introduced. And you can see it was actually introduced in 1996. So quite some time, right? So this is not, as we say, super new. And I would say in the 2000 years, like from 2000 to 2010, not so really a lot of activity. And I think it actually picked up again now over the last couple of years. So starting with like mid of 2015, 2016, around that. And now we see quite a momentum in the market for pickup of this standard. FYI, my company, Time to Act, is also actually now certified for ISO 14001. You know, another one that may be, you know, there is one that has been introduced, that it's not necessarily always on the timeline. There are a couple of standards that didn't make it on the timeline as being so substantial, but there is one, interestingly enough, which is on greenhouse gases. So it's about actually, how much you consume, I would say, combustible carbon-based fuels or resources in order to generate energy. And quite interesting, we see for a couple of larger service providers that actually rely on massive amounts of energy that they look into this to see or to work together with energy suppliers that actually follow also that protocol. So you can actually check whether they are following this greenhouse gas GEG emission protocol. Again, there is nothing that you can be certified against, but this is one topic. Another one I think is quite interesting before I get to the latest one, which I think is also quite interesting because it's very close to the 50,000, right, Ron? Mm-hmm. When it's about asset management, but the ISO 20400, it's on sustainable procurement. So making purchasing decisions to actually identify goods and services that actually have been produced, in order to be in a good relationship with society or the minimizing or have been produced by minimizing the impact on the environment, there is already a standard for this. Yeah, sustainable procurement was released in 2017. And then we have the ISO 50001 energy management systems. And this is also just on a systematic energy management. And that's very close also to what what we would need to look into when it comes to IT asset management. I mentioned energy is kind of like what makes IT work. You know, without energy, the little things in front of us or the bigger things, they won't make any noise or show anything on screen. So energy is, I think, core. You also see a couple of other standards. I haven't provided all of the details there, but interestingly enough, also 27001 deals a little bit with sustainability, more in the area of governance. Again, we're talking about ESG, right? That's why also the 9001 made it on the list. We have also topics on social responsibility, that's the 26000, or on anti-bribery management, ISO 37001. And then the 45001, which was released in 2018 on health and security. Yeah, or health and safety, health and safety. So again, ISO, I would say, has already quite a few standards that we can either reference or that we can use as a basis to derive the actual elements for something like either a guidance document or an IT asset management sustainability standard.
And maybe you're going to cover this later, Jan, but there's obviously a lot of frameworks outside of ISO as well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Just to get your perspective, like which ones, like for example, on the 14,064, there's the GHG protocol, which I think is more broadly accepted.
Exactly, exactly. Oh wow, this is where things can get complicated. But let me get to this, Ron.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry.
No. It's an absolutely valid question. I mean, again, when we talk about sustainability in the meantime, it's nothing that happens in a vacuum or where there is nothing. No, there are already standards. Typically, the fact that there is a standard is a response. And don't take this wrong in any way, guys. ISO is just a mirror of what the expert in the world think is necessary to do certain things or to be aligned on certain aspects. But most of that is driven by laws and regulation, right? So someone has picked up and said, now we need to have something like, a greenhouse gas protocol or a Kyoto protocol or something like this, where the leaders of the world come together and make announcements or agree to do something. Most of what is out there is just like, let's say, just a declaration. It's not necessarily translated into national law or international laws. But for sure, there are some of them. And honestly, I haven't done a deep dive on all of the elements that are related then to laws and regulations. But we cannot just do the things we define outside of this, let's say, framework or this, let's say, playing field. There are already rules that need to be followed. Now, to give you an example, and you will see this when I get to the actual elements or topics that I think are relevant for sustainability. For instance, there is a law in Germany on technical, what's it says? I forgot the term. I will pick it up later on. So it's basically that there was a massive discussion around Apple products, as you may remember, that they are unrepairable in a way, or that Apple actually forced updates that could not be loaded on older devices, which would still work, but you cannot do the update anymore. And I'm not sure about the actual term of that, but I will pick it up later on, is where there's a law in Germany that actually is forcing companies to secure over a specific lifespan that you need to be able to maintain that that asset, right?
We have something comparable in France with the repairability
right to repair.
Also a new law about sustainable IT, about the need of no obsolescence.
Technical obsolescence. That's the term, sir. Thank you very much.
Yes, and so on.
Absolutely. So this is what we see now as kind of like translated into country-specific laws. But let's get into this. So I was trying to find a wrapper around a specific area of topics. And I call this, because it's for me one of the main elements of sustainability, or the ones that we typically have in mind when we think about IT and sustainability. The one that comes right into our head is right energy consumption. Interestingly enough, energy consumption is just one parameter in the equation, because think about compute consumption. Well, kind of like tied together, right? If you have a very performant CPU, so many gigabytes of RAM or storage, all of that will then consume energy. And the bigger that stuff is, it's kind of like a no-brainer, the more energy it will consume, right? Make the systems bigger. Think about those little devices here. I know my first mobile phone, and I'm just holding up an iPhone. My first mobile phone that I have was good to go for almost a week with one battery charge, okay? Right? Try to do this with this iPhone. I need to charge that thing every day because it has so many resources in it, first of all. And this is where it becomes interesting then. It's not just the resources, the compute resources, but what's happening with those resources. Let me get to that in the next step. Mm-hmm. But besides that, and I'm just holding up my little phone here again, is that also the question of how is actually that produced? So what are the materials being used on this? So it's really the question, like, have there been materials being used that are just fancy and, you know, but it actually takes quite a bit of energy, and maybe there are scarce resources as well that, you know, you can only have once. And if that, you know, goes then into a waste disposal process, all of those resources are gone, because it's the way how those components are also glued and tied together, right? But let's think about those three elements: compute consumption, energy consumption, material consumption. And I try to go on the next level and say, we can talk about green software. Green software for me is something where I think there hasn't been too much time spent on this topic. And let me give you a couple of thoughts that I have on this. So you can actually develop software which is, it will get to the result, but the code is so bad that it actually consumes way more CPU or storage as it should, right? Or as it could. So if you would have smarter people developing the software in a smarter way, it would actually consume way less compute and way less energy. And I think that is something that we haven't really had a focus on, right? We just consume software because that's software. No one really thought about, like, you know, how much storage will it require? First of all, how much CPU consumption will it have? How much digital waste will it create? Because the data model is so crappy that it will fill up my database with terabytes of data, which no one really needs. That's for me green software, okay? And green software is something that actually should have KPIs or certain parameters that can be used in order to identify what green software is, so that you can make a better decision in the purchase of a software. And when it's about IT asset manager, we are talking about also cost, and cost not just for licenses, right, or for those little devices. It's also about energy consumption, compute consumption. And we are talking about FinOps, where we say, well, that system is oversized because it's underutilized. You know, that's kind of like the FinOps approach. Right, go a little bit further and say, you could even have a way more better fit as a template, or use a specific virtual machine configuration if you would use it with green software. I hope you get my thought, right? So it's not just downsizing on a system configuration based on the software or storage you need, but with a smarter approach to have than green software, you can even reduce it much more, right? Green software. With that comes elements like green hardware, right? So it's basically the question of, you have a device, it's a question of composition of materials, and it will have a certain energy consumption just for the fact that you turn it on. Yes, and turning it on, it's related then to software for sure. So I mean, some of those devices, you can't really differentiate what's hardware, what's software. I mean, yes, we know software is the code, and hardware is basically the technical components that allow for the operation of this code. But that's green hardware. And now we're also talking about things happening in the cloud. So what about green services? Where organizations can say, you know, you're not just getting a software as a service, but we will provide this as a green service, right? So because we use green hardware and we use green software by also then looking at how we use compute, how we use energy, and how we use material. So you get this green stamp on the service. And think about, I know that this is in, you know, talking about the US, and I've been to California several times, by the way, this year again, for vacation. Lake Tahoe, my favorite place, Ron, I will be there again.
Very nice.
You always see there, it's kind of like this very eco-based way of how you use food, or, you know, they talk about the produce. You know, I know that's kind of like a term, the produce. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, looking at food that we eat that has been produced in a very bioethical, ecological way, okay? And there are even now, kind of like certificates that you can put on food to say, you know, those animals were treated well, you know, and, you know, there was only natural fertilizer being used. And I don't know what, I don't have all the words for this, but you get me, right? And people are now actually picking up on this and only buy this type of food. We don't have anything for this on green services, on IT asset management related services. And I'm thinking about specifically cloud services in this context.
Not only personal maintenance.
Wait for it. So this is just resource consumption. This is just resource consumption.
So yeah, I have a question before we move on.
Yeah, sure.
Clearly, material consumption, energy consumption make a ton of sense. I'm struggling a bit with, maybe you can understand the compute consumption. Like what's the meaning? What's the significance of computing other than that it generates energy, which you already covered in energy consumption?
Yes, it's like, kind of like it's a mix between energy and material. Okay. So energy is something like you put energy in to make something work. And yes, material then is the is a combination of elements, like there is a CPU and there is a hard drive in it. Now, you turn this device on in order to make it work, and then you make use of the RAM and the CPU. But the question is, how do you actually then use those compute elements? And this is like CPU, storage, graphical processors. Those are the compute elements. So they are there, how they are being utilized. So it's for me, it's a little different from just, yes, it has a strong tie to energy consumption, but you know, the RAM is there either way. The CPU is there and being used either way. But the question is, how are you using it? That's for me, compute consumption. Okay. So those terms are not final. This is just a kind of like a collection of ideas.
No, that's fine. That makes sense. So essentially, what you're saying is computer resource. It really comes down to energy and material. It's one of those two, but it's just a different view of it. But it's not a new.
No, it's not really. Impact. I mean, no.
But
no.
It's just a different view of the energy. And the
exactly, material. Exactly. Okay. So you look at the way, again, you know, you can run a machine and think about you have a car, you start the car, okay? And it sits there, but it's not driving. So you're using the material, you use the energy, but you're not computing it in a way. So you're not driving it. Now you can drive it with, let's say, one passenger on board, or you can drive it with 10 passengers on board. That for me is the actual, let's call it like compute consumption equivalent in a way. So you make use of what's available, but the question is, how smart do you do this? How smart are you with this? So, and this is what I now call compute consumption. So it's there, the car is turned on, the engine is running, but you're not driving it now, right? So it's like, yes, at the end of the day, it's the material, it's the energy, but what do you do with it? It's, I know it's kind of like a layer in between somehow, but I thought I put it on the same level for me, because I think this is also now where the rubber meets the road, because energy TCO has been in place for years, right? And looking at material consumption is something that, you know, in TCO is all about. Maybe you have seen this, you know, your screen turns off after 5 minutes of inactivity and stuff like this. You know, that's a typical TCO thing. And material consumption on having kind of like, you know, material that is recyclable and stuff like this. So it's a question of, let me get to this later on, but it's all about also then the element of recyclable, or the recycling quota of a device. As an example, there are in the meantime phones that you can buy, which have kind of like this green stamp on it, because they pretty much consist out of 90% of whatever recycled material, as an example, right? But this is then going into the recyclability, and I'll get to the, let's call it like life cycle elements of an asset later in a couple of minutes. But again, I thought compute it's kind of like something that we need to consider outside of just energy and material, because that is there regardless of what you do with it, you know?
So it's almost like this is the way to take it from the individual to like society as a whole, right? Because if, like I said, in the car example, if you have 10 cars with one driver versus one car.
Exactly. So this.
But it comes down to what's the overall society, material consumption and energy. It's still those two things.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's just like, how do you get there? Okay.
Exactly. Right. And for me,
Jan. Hi, it's Roseanne from Montreal, Canada. Am I able to ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I work for AnglePoint as one of their senior consultants on the ITAM program transformation team. So we see a lot of clients that are simply trying to build out their program maturity from the ground up. And I was wondering if you had any best practice examples or some of those ISO documents that jump out that would help us while we are building out their program maturity, work in tandem to start embedding some of these, you know, sustainability best practice principles, if you wish, into their IT asset lifecycle stages, right? So kind of working in tandem. I don't know if you're going to touch on that.
I will, later in your discussion. Yeah, a little bit. You know, if you ask me, are there already, call it like good management practices that that have been developed? No. I think we are in a development stage, but it's I would say it's moving rapidly. And I could say if you know someone else will do something around this topic, and I'm not just talking about IT asset management from our perspective as a working group, but there are quite a few activities out there where we see it's all about reducing carbon footprint. And as I mentioned, CIOs, because they have now to present and prepare something like a sustainability report. So they are actually called to show their contribution on the reduction of the carbon footprint, to identify options to reduce energy consumption in a data center, as an example. So I work with quite a few CIOs, and they brought this topic up as an element of their five-year IT strategy that I just was able to work on with them in 2022 and 2023. But there is currently not really, let's call it like, again, something like a better practice documentation, which you can already say, I take this and apply it to a specific IT asset management program. I don't have it. If you have it, I'm more than happy to also, get my eyes on it. But it's not there yet.
I just
give you an example. Again, you know, that's why I came up with this green software aspect or compute consumption. It's interesting to see, you know, there are quite a few changes also in the way of how software is being developed. And I'm had a very close look into software development practices. So there are, I'm not talking about Scrum and being agile. This is just a way of how to get to a software, but actually how you architect a software, how to make sure that you don't try to replicate features and elements that are already in other software solutions. So to have a much better differentiation between something like a, and this is now talking about a little bit outside of this topic about software architecture. Typically, software consists of three architecture elements. One is the data extraction layer, or that's basically the, let's say, the layer that supports the interaction with the outside world, right? And then you have a business logic layer where all of the fun happens, where you put data together and you analyze data or you enrich data and what have you. And then you have a data representation layer. Most of software products that you know consist of those three elements. The question is, why? Think about it for a moment. Why does every software has a data representation layer? Why not utilize existing BI solutions like Power BI, Tableau? I know Anglepoint is using something else. I forgot the name, but you know what I'm talking about. Exactly. So interestingly enough, there is a lot of energy wasted. I'm talking about human energy on developing features and capabilities where you already have those elements now available and those BI solutions, as an example. Yeah. We're talking about API economy. So it's like making solutions more, combinable, or to make them easier to integrate, right? Those are, I would say, they don't have necessarily in mind that this will help to reduce the compute requirements, but it actually drives it a little bit.
Yeah.
So, and again, this was the reason why I thought this is so important, and I actually put it to the left, which is, you know, it's just, for me, it's kind of like the first thing, because this is where the rubber meets the road, as I said. Yeah,
so just an update on that. There's and the topic came up yesterday in the SE7 opening meeting.
Yeah.
And, you know, SE7 is about software system engineering.
I know.
So they're starting a new, it may end up being a new working group. They're not sure, but about green software. And the idea is, you know, the Green Software Foundation with their software carbon intensity model and all that.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do, if I understood it correctly, is try to take that and make it into an ISO standard.
Well, there you go. So,
but you're right. It's getting a score for a piece of software, getting a score that you can compare one software to another, how well it is engineered from a green perspective.
Exactly.
So I can connect you with Anupam, who is going to lead the new FSC7.
Yeah.
But again, they're looking at it more from a software development perspective.
This is where it starts. And at the end of the day, we're looking very much from a consumption perspective. And I'm not saying consumption as compute consumption, but we as, let's say, consultants or service providers, tool developers, etc., helping customers then to make the best out of their IT assets. Mm-hmm. But making the best out of their IT asset investments also means that we should help them provide guidance on which software to pick and what helps them to identify, let's say, a software which would not just be cheap from a licensing perspective or easy to manage from a lifecycle management perspective, but also is smart enough or, let's say, lean enough to reduce the compute consumption, energy consumption, and material consumption, right? So I think, again, this is where things become interestingly intertwined also with the other initiatives from ISO. But yeah, so this was all about just resource consumption. So we are talking about something that's there and can be used. Mm-hmm. Now, talk about lifecycle management or IT asset disposition. I don't really like the name, but it is kind of like an industry term. Sustainability is not just about this, like what is this asset doing or what is this service doing? And hopefully it's a green service based on green hardware and green software or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also the question of, I try to also find the right words for this, calling about durability. Try to take your phone, and I know there's a challenge on TikTok, I think, where you are actually asked to throw your phone as high as possible in the air and catch it. No, and if it's not falling down, you win, you know, and no kidding. This is a TikTok challenge. But durability is basically, can that stuff drop on the floor? Will it break? But this is like a simplified example, but it's basically how durable is it? Okay. So will it actually last for a while? And think about it. I have seen computers now and we are also providing from one of our companies, PKS. They are doing mainframe optimization. And there are some companies still have mainframes operated that are 20 plus years old, right? Yeah. And we're talking about the hardware, right? This is still running on those old machines, but Murphy's Law, never change a running system. So it's still there. Interestingly enough, if you are now talking also, and this is something where I think we have to also educate the industry is, everyone is out for the latest, sorry to use that term, shit. Like we always want to have the latest and greatest, the newest iPhone, the newest this, the newest that. And talking about technical obsolescence, we basically are unsatisfied when this is 2 years old, even though it still works, you know.
There's a new Vision Pro came out yesterday.
Yeah, man.
Mine is 7 years old.
Well, there you go. I like that. I like that. So just think about it. Durability is now also, it's not just that it really will just last for, I'm not saying forever, but, you know, I'm a big fan of old car shows, like classic cars, you know. I mean, there are cars that still run, you know, and are 80 years old as an example. You know, if we think about IT, we always have in mind, like after 5 years, they are fully depreciated and just throw it away. We have this throwaway kind of like attitude. And I would say, yes, with durability, that attitude may have been, or it lived up to this momentum where people also say, you know, after 5 years, those devices feel kind of like old, they feel icky. It's not a good experience anymore, you know, that the buttons are kind of like already shiny, you know, the buttons don't work anymore. It takes ages to boot up. And then we're talking about maintainability, because this is where technical obsolescence kicks in as well. You don't get any updates for those devices anymore. So they are not really maintainable in this regard, right? So to keep them in a state where everyone feels comfortable from a security perspective, from whatever it is, like the latest features that are loaded on that device or on this piece of hardware, the latest software that you want to use, and things like that. Think about OS updates, right? And that then suddenly, you know, with the iPhone 4, which is probably still good for some people to work with, but it's outside of the support provided from Apple, as an example. So maintainability. And that's also an interesting element, repairability. So you can maintain it, which means more or less like, you know, you can clean it, you can dust it, you can upload, updates and stuff like this. Maintainability in this regard is pretty much more on the, let's say, keeping it nice and shiny, cleaning it, bringing it up to date in regards to software updates, etc. But when it's on the hardware side, this is more than on repairability. It's like, are those devices easy to be repaired? Think about a broken screen. I mean, this is kind of like the easiest example. Broken hard drive, memory that doesn't work, a keyboard that's stuck. Like a couple of weeks ago, my wife came to me and said, "Sorry, darling, I just poured a cup of water on the keyboard and the computer is not working anymore." Well, you know, you can put it in a bag of rice and hopefully it will actually try it out. And it actually did. You know, I know quite a bit about computer repairs. But anyway, so the question is, how easy are devices repairable? And last but not least, how easy are they recyclable? Because if they are beyond repairability, and definitely, you know, a repair is coming at cost. So you need to replace some elements or some components. And it's not just the material that you need then to consider as a cost element, but you have time that goes into the repair. And that's why also, you know, typically assets like hardware assets have a certain lifespan, because then you say, you know, that the actual commercial value that sits with that device is basically zero now. And putting any more effort into this is something that needs to be considered from a commercial perspective. Right on the brakes, very hard is like really ask, we should ask ourselves if those depreciation processes that have been developed from whomever actually still reflect the aspects that we would need to consider in regards to sustainability, you know. And yes, you can see that there is a cost development on the hardware side, which means more compute, you know, less cost. So there is kind of like a declining curve on cost per gigabyte and stuff like this. So we are more or less also forced by the industry to buy always the latest and greatest stuff.
So a question on this for the iPad.
Okay. Just a sec. With that, you know, there's another layer coming now. Maybe that. So first of all, like, this is kind of like in between when it comes to material consumption and recyclability. It's like kind of like the recycling quota on hardware elements. But beyond below that lifecycle management visualization here, we have then also elements like I call it like just to work with the, you know, with what you have. And I can say I grew up in a country where we had to live with basically not a lot, you know. I grew up in East Germany and we didn't have access to some of the nice things. So we always had to improvise, let's call it like this. So we were quite innovative in combining products into something new that in other ways you didn't get. So it's all about extensibility. It's just like, what could you do with that device? And again, I'm holding up my iPhone. It's actually a problem to add more memory. You can't do it. Older phones actually had the option to put an SD card in there. You probably have stuff like this. Even the latest Samsung phones don't have it anymore, right? So extensibility, replace components pretty much. In other words, also to make something extensible, that can be something that is just done with a slot on the device where you just push a card in it and that's okay. But this is just a simplified example. But what's accessibility? In other words, if you want to repair something, if you want to maintain something, you need to get that thing open, right? So how do you do this? With a hammer, yeah, sure. There are probably some hidden screws that I don't know, but you know, some people actually know how to get into stuff, but and there are YouTube videos.
You need a special toolkit.
But you need a special toolkit as an example. But it's, you know, in some areas, really, all of this is just a ball of glue. And I know that this is just like simplifying of how it looks like, but it's basically a composite material where you have not just like this, the chip and the platine and whatever it is. It's basically just, it's just one thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an idea, also in cars, like it's typical today that you completely replace an actual component. You know, in my car, I had a problem with my towing hook in the back, you know, and I wasn't even aware that this had a little own computer, because it has to adjust the ABS system, it has to adjust the stability program. So there's a little extra computer that actually kind of kicks in as soon as you hook like a trailer to your car. I wasn't even aware of this. And this didn't work. So I went to the car dealer and that guy said, "Well, no problem. We have the replacement component tomorrow." So they actually replaced, and I'm not kidding, it had the size of an Apple computer, which was just taken out. It was totally like I would even like solder together, so you couldn't actually open it up. Was a massive metal block and inside electronics. And I asked them, like, could you actually open this up and replace, I don't know, the chip, the condensator, and whatever it is? And they said, why? You know, this is the way how we currently think about this accessibility. Yeah. Which also brings something in like modularity. In other words, if something on this device is not good anymore and I want to replace it in the meaning of I also want to like throw it away and replace it with a new memory element or so, is it modular enough to actually update it so that I can continue using the device, but let's say with a replaced keyboard, with a new CPU. Interestingly enough, you know, there are server options available from HP and Dell, where you have like a box, and the only thing you do is kind of like you have cartridges like now, and then you just pull them, like push them in, and this is like your little computer then, right? Well, the cartridge itself is something again for the throwaway culture, right? But overall, if there is something that you would like to have, you don't have to throw away the whole box. You just take out the cartridge and replace it, and you know it's not perfect, but then you can put a cartridge in with a new CPU or more performant CPU, et cetera, like modularity. And last but not least, returnability. Also interesting, in Germany, there is a law that everyone who sells you tech needs to take it back, right? So that they then actually can feed this into a recycle process, which is not you throwing that thing in just a regular garbage and just because of some sophisticated recycle process at the, I don't know, you know, before it goes on the waste, what is like this in the US, I've seen this too often, like those big piles of waste, yeah. You know, I mean, in Germany, they're actually scanning now pretty much every garbage, every garbage that goes in is being scanned for metal, and then the metal is being pulled out of the garbage and it's going into a different recycling process where they try to select then, you know, valuable components. I mean, you don't believe how much gold is in that little device here that I'm holding up an iPhone. There's gold in here, right? And some other scarce resources. You know, I'm driving an electronic car, and I know I spend way much time here. Sorry for this, but, you know, sustainable is important. You know, it's interesting enough, there is a study which actually tells if we would replace all of the fuel combustion based cars today with, you know, cars like, you know, like a Tesla that requires batteries, in other words, lithium, we don't have that much lithium in the world to do this, right? And talking about life cycle perspective, we probably could get everyone a car right now, but what about then in 10 years? And lithium is nothing that can be recreated, right? It's either there or it's gone. So it's a scarce resource. And, you know, but this is just, you know, a question of then, you know, recyclability, modularity, and last but not least, again, coming to this term, returnability. So can we return something so that it can be repurposed, can be recycled, etc.? You know, it's kind of like a layer below, which kind of like then combines those four elements. Sorry, and Ron, you have a question, and I probably that additional information didn't answer the question, but.
No, actually the last one, because I was looking for something around like, you can repurpose it, you can donate it, you can
do. Exactly, that's for me, returnability. Returnability.
Yeah, so your answer.
Yeah, so for me, again, you know, we have this throwaway attitude. Sorry, guys, this is really, and I'm not taking myself out of this equation. I read about a new Chinese company, which is basically focusing now on one time use only for one like moment clothing, right? So you buy a pair of pants, you buy a t-shirt, you wear it, you throw it away. And they're kind of like becoming really big right now. And, you know, basically one of those t-shirts costs you, I don't know, let's give or take a dollar or two. Right. So this, again, we still have this attitude like we have, like, I don't know, a second or third Earth that we can, you know, use for scarce resources. And maybe there are some asteroids and comets out there, and maybe we find something cool on Mars, you know, and Elon Musk will get us there. But for the moment, we need to get, you know, again, also the industry educated that, yes, for IT asset management, all of those aspects are super critical. Yeah. And if I would now make a decision on buying something, yes, probably my CIO would tell me, try to get the costs down. You know, this is like what drives us, and costs from a purchase perspective, like that moment, no one is really currently having something like a requirements catalog where it says, well, the hardware should be durable, maintainable, repairable, recyclable. It's always about, you know, yes, it needs to be compatible with, you know, it cannot cost more than. And that's the moment of purchase. No one looks at this life cycle aspect from a cost perspective. And you can buy something really cheap, but it may only hold for a year, and then you buy again, right? And then you buy again. For the moment, it was super cheap. Maybe you should spend more money, buy something that actually fulfills those requirements. And there you go. Over the next 10 years, you probably save money. You know, not on the just life cycle aspects, but then also on resource consumption. If you buy, sorry for all those examples, but just I also want to get your awareness. I got myself a Ford Mustang Mach-E last year, okay? That's a super, I mean, it's not the biggest SUV in the market. I think it's the competitor model for the Model Y, to what I know from Tesla. And my neighbor had a Hyundai Ioniq for almost 4 years at that time, you know? The Mach-E is consuming 20 on average, and I've driven that thing now for almost 15,000 miles, right? So it has an average consumption on 18 kilowatts per 100 kilometers. I'm not sure what that is in miles, but you know, it's, I think Tesla will get you to 16 kilowatts, okay, per 100 kilometers. So, and my neighbor now actually bought himself the new Mini. It's produced also from some Chinese company, and sold his Ioniq to me. And I bought it because I know the neighbor and I know the car, and it only had like 50,000 miles on the, you know, on the counter. So it was still a good deal for me to buy. And I've driven that car now. It's 4 years old. That car only uses 12 kilowatts. On average for 100 kilometers. So not sure what happened within the last 5 years, but you know, we are talking then about big, massive entertainment screens, making those things bigger and faster. I mean, we're talking about cars like now, Tesla Plaid. I think that thing can go like, I don't know, 200 miles an hour and goes from 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds, where I think like, where is this taking us? This is totally into the wrong direction, you know? It doesn't make sense.
It's very important to have such acceleration in city.
It's like, crap. Sorry, you know, it's absolutely unsafe. I know I had a Beamer, which was going up to 170 miles an hour, 160 miles an hour before I swapped to the Ford Mustang Mach-E. And I can tell you, I was driving 260 kilometers an hour. It doesn't feel safe, and I'm not a Formula One racer, so my average speed now, and actually, you know, I'm sitting kind of like trying to be also, you know, sustainable in what I do. I reduced my average speed now to 70. That's at 70 miles per hour or 110 to 120 kilometers an hour. This is what I'm driving. I'm not driving any faster. This is it. Mm-hmm. There you go. Again, these are just a couple of examples where I think also now, you know, we're talking about a good idea of having an e-car, like a personal electronic vehicle, PEV, as it's called, you know, but we're taking it again into the wrong direction. Like we make it sustainable from a perspective, we don't burn carbon-based fuels, but there you go. We make it so energy inefficient that you have to go to a quick charger like every 100 miles or so. Like how stupid is that?
Right? How electricity is produced too.
Exactly. I mean, that's a thing, you know, where energy consumption, and you saw those one reference, this one reference on, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, or, you know, that actually kind of like brings it together. Okay. All of this is not happening outside of, we are living in a box. That was a song actually in the 80s called Living in a Box. Not sure what the band was. I may remember it was one of my favorite songs when I grew up. So we have already existing laws, or at least call it like international conventions, like the Geneva Convention, the Paris Convention, the Kyoto Protocol, and what have you. So it's kind of like just a signal of general interest in this topic that countries should take the overall idea and then reduce carbon emission by the year 2035 to so and so many percent, or by so and so many percent, in comparison to a starting point, and or to reduce this increase in global warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade and stuff like this. But if you think about it, there are not really and there are not so many countries that actually made or took that idea and put it into the national laws. There are a couple of them, and probably, you know, Europe is quite, quite strict on this topic. I'm not sure about France, but I can speak for Germany. I mean, we have a Green Party, which is a member of the, or, you know, element of this coalition that is leading our country right now. So they're pushing quite heavy on this aspect. And yes, we have now laws on technical obsolescence and recyclability and returnability. And stuff like this. We don't have anything on compute consumption, and you know, it's not there. But we also have then, let's call it regulations. Regulations are not necessarily an aspect that you need to implement, but it's then either something that is applicable to your industry, or it's kind of like coming from an interest group and you want to make sure that this is taken care of. This is sometimes call it like, you know, requirements then, for instance, related to standards like, you know, the ISO 14001 or 50001. And this is the area we're kind of like sitting in right now. And specifically on the left side, I think, you know, talking about next steps, I think we still have to drive this and support education on the relevance for sustainability. Mm-hmm. And actually start adopting those ISO standards for IT assets, and you know, get, and this is why I was more thinking on an actual standard, something, you know, looking at the Deming wheel, where you really have a plan to check act approach for sustainability management in ITEM. And then looking at the, you know, aspects that are then hopefully also tied, coming back to the question from one of your colleagues from Anglepoint, where you actually have a direct connect to the IT lifecycle management processes and the asset functional management processes. Plus, what the standard should do, it should provide guidance. This is where things can get a bit tricky, because I know ISO is not saying, you know, you need to have, let's say, a recycled quota of X percent, but at least to give some ideas and guidance on outcome-driven metrics or key performance indicators for good sustainable management practices in ITEM. That is kind of like what I envision for this dash 13 to include. And that's all from my side. And sorry for spending an hour almost on that.